Welcome to the Speak and Get What You Want podcast, where you learn to communicate like the world's most successful leaders. Now, here are your hosts, TK Stratton and Chad Kirby. Welcome, everyone, to the Speak and Get What You Want podcast. I'm here with a great friend and an absolute expert in communications, because as we all know, when we are communicating, oftentimes we're trying to get people to take some form of action. We're trying to take them to a path that will be better for them. And nobody that understands sales quite like our guest today, Kyle Van Voorhis. He's a brilliant mind, and we're grateful. Kyle, it's great to have you with us.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And Kyle's the founder of Voorhis.com. And Kyle, what Kyle understands is the importance of connection. And so, Kyle, tell me a little bit about your journey. Where did you start? And I mean, everyone wants to know, how does someone become an expert? But what are some of the key things in your background that brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, well, I mean, by far the most impactful is the ability to communicate. I did a lot of theater when I was younger. I did stand-up comedy for 5 years, but I grew up going to a lot of seminars and seeing a lot of speakers. So my heroes growing up were the Tony Robbins, the Les Browns. So I had, I had orators as my idols, and I really grew up very passionate about speaking and communicating. Started in sales. It was a great job for me because I could sell stuff during the day, make more than minimum wage, and then I could do comedy at night. And then my sales career started to grow. Turns out I was pretty good at it. One thing led to another. I chose to pursue the career of sales instead of continuing on the comedy path, and it went great for me. I was an entry-level salesperson for a while, then more of a direct closing role, then started leading teams and building sales teams. And at this point, I've built over 75, probably near 80 B2B sales teams in my career.
Wow, that's incredible. So, I mean, that's a background that very few people have. I would think that I'm not suggesting that no one has ever been a comedian and then gone in and built sales organizations, but that has to put you in a pretty small group, Kyle.
Yeah, there's a few of us. You know, I met a couple other people who have a comedy background. It is very helpful, that is for sure. But it's also, now it's a lot more popular. But back then, you know, it's much less common to find people who had tried comedy before.
Right, right. Now, I would think a comedian, one of the things that are critical to your success is your ability to read other people and to see what's working and what's not. How have you used that skill set of reading other people helped you in sales?
Well, you get really good at reading a room when you do comedy. And what you find is, like, especially for larger audiences, you know, like, certain parts of the room, like where the mood is, and you might be losing people over here. And you've probably seen this in throughout your career too. Like, you're speaking in front of a large group of people, you could tell when the energy is dipping somewhere. That is an incredibly useful skill to have, especially somebody like me, whose humor is a big part of my personality. Like, anybody who meets me knows, like, I'm always cracking jokes, and I feel very comfortable in those environments. I also am very quick at figuring out what somebody's sense of humor is like. So it has been super helpful, both from, hey, people tend to like me pretty quickly. That's helpful if you're trying to sell stuff. But I would also say I worked incredibly hard, and I was very competent at the work that I did, but I was also fun to be around. And that's a really great combination to have, to both be competent and people enjoy working with you. And so I felt like I moved up in my career much quicker than I would have if I didn't have those traits. I was in a leadership role, leading people who are much older than me, when I was fairly young, 24 years old. So that was an adjustment, but that would never have happened if I didn't have that comedy background, I think. But definitely if I wasn't as comfortable in social situations and reading a room as I am.
Yeah, but Kyle, as you think about a comedian, okay? Yeah. So comedians, their joy comes when other people are enjoying life, right? So right. When you're a comedian, you get up there and you're like, okay, my sole purpose is to help these other people maybe forget about the stresses of life for a moment. You know, let's have them have a really great experience. How has that mindset of going in saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to stand up in front of this group of people. I'm going to make their life better. How has that type of mindset impacted the way you've approached sales?
Well, it's a bit complicated because another reason why I was so attracted to comedy, and a lot of comedians are, is because we typically, as people who've done comedy before, have a very high need for approval, right? That's why we're going on stage and saying jokes. So there is an element of it that's like, yeah, I want to provide value to the audience, make them laugh, forget about their trouble. That's definitely part of it. But then the other part of it is that their reactions to me being funny gives me a lot of validation. So in some ways, yeah, very helpful, translates really well because I've always felt that sales, I've always seen sales through the lens of service. Like I'm really helping somebody make the best decision for them. That's really helpful and aligns ethically, which is good. But at the same time, the challenge with that is you have to decouple that at some point where your that need for validation can't always come from external sources. And you know, it maybe on the surface level, it seems like, oh yeah, that'll translate really well to sales, but you get a lot of rejection in sales and having your validation come from other people can become really, really destructive in a sales environment for a lot of reasons, but especially because you're held to quota. You have, you know, a boss who wants you to hit a specific number. You get paid based on how much you sell and you're talking to people who might say no to you. It's a bit of a complicated relationship and I don't know if it was mostly positive. I think it was probably either 50-50 or maybe even a little bit more, added a bit more challenge for me.
Wow, what a great insight. You know, so you, as you, you know, you think about the rejection, a lot of comedians probably wouldn't stay in the business very long if they were as rejected as often as a sales rep is. But my question to you, I mean, Kyle, you've been in this business for a long time. How have you seen it change? What are some of the, you know, top things that have changed in sales, in the business of sales, since you started to where you are today?
I think a big thing is more buyers are aware of tactics that salespeople use, which makes them a lot less effective. So that's probably like the education level of the buyer is probably the biggest thing that's changed. But at the end of the day, I don't know if that much fundamentally has changed. And I have a good example of this. So let me show you this. This is pretty cool. This here, Chad, is a 100-year-old sales book. So this was published in 1924. It turned 100 this year. I smell it. It still smells like cigarette. It's crazy. This is like one of my favorite possessions because I can just imagine the person having this on their desk, smoking a cigarette and reading and trying to improve their skills.
Right.
But let me read you, and I read this often to salespeople because I think we forget about the importance of this kind of fundamental principle. And what I'm about to read has not changed. And I think a lot of people need to realize that you can't let this part slip. And what it is enthusiasm. So enthusiasm is contagious. Feeling imparts feeling. It spreads like conflagration. The enthusiasm of the salesman is communicated to the prospect during every stage of the sale, but it reaches a climax as he holds his offering up before the prospect in the form of a vivid description or picture. Intense feeling radiates from his eye, his face, his voice, his attitude. The prospect absorbs it. It is one of the imponderable forces of salesmanship. It is especially effective at stimulating desire. That is what we might have lost a bit. I interact with fewer and fewer people who are genuinely enthusiastic about the product or service that they offer. And if we can get back to that, I think we're going to be in a much better place as a kind of as a sales industry. But also, like you look at business owners or you know speakers, like and you know from the stage, enthusiasm very contagious. That translates all the way down, and I interact with a lot of people and a lot of salespeople too, who just I don't feel that same level of enthusiasm over their product or service as I feel like they should have.
Okay, why? What do you think contributes to that?
I think part of it is they don't want to be salesy, right? Like, oh, if I'm way too overly enthusiastic, that might trigger them to think that I'm some kind of salesperson. I think that's probably one of the bigger reasons. The other one is I feel like people have a lot of self-doubt. You know, we're on our phones all the time. We're looking at people with perfect lives. Hey, why would they buy from me when they could buy from so-and-so? You know, if you're a coach or consultant, maybe you follow other coaches and consultants that you look up to. It's like, why would they buy from me, right? So there's a lot of that self-doubt or that imposter syndrome. Those are probably the most common reasons, but your guess is as good as mine.
Well, and I was just curious because I think about, you know, you and I are both familiar with the Silicon Slopes, right? And yeah. I know you spend a lot of time working with tech companies in, you know, based in Utah. I heard recently, Kyle, and you can confirm this for me, but I heard there's actually more tech companies in Utah than there are than there is in Silicon Valley now.
So, I've heard that stat too, but I'm very skeptical that that's true.
Wow, that is just crazy to me. But yeah, if you drive from Salt Lake down to Utah County, there it's just tech companies all along the way. And so I was talking to a sales leader there, and they were saying like Firehouse Subs or one of the sandwich places, you know, people would overhear another person saying that they're a sales rep for this company. And then the sales leader would go over and say, hey, how about coming over to mine? You know? Yeah. And so it was like almost, you know, so much recruiting happening going on. Do you think that the people's longevity at a company sometimes contributes to their lack of enthusiasm?
Yes, of course. But it's an interesting, like tie in there. Yeah. I mean, of course, if you haven't been at a company for very long, you may be less enthusiastic about the product or the service. Sure. But I don't know if that's a good excuse. I think that's probably an outcome that we're seeing. I almost look at it as a company that's unable to keep a salesperson for long enough must also be the kind of company that struggles transferring the enthusiasm for the product or service to that salesperson. So I'm not sure if it's, I don't know what comes first, the enthusiasm or the company's ability to spark the enthusiasm, probably right. That one. But I think they're probably very intertwined. And it's a shame because we should be excited about what we sell. If not, we're just trying to make a buck, and you can do that in a lot of ways. You don't have to sell, you know, software to do that.
Right. And you know, but you mentioned something earlier. I just want to go back to it just real quickly, Kyle. You mentioned that some of the traditional sales tactics that worked maybe in the past don't work as well today. And so if somebody's saying, I want to get better at sales, and now, and by the way, that should be something that everybody is saying regardless of their industry, right? I spend a lot of time working with attorneys, Kyle. And what's crazy is I've never, when I get up at a conference and speaking in front of attorneys, I say, how many of you were so passionate about sales that you decided to become an attorney, right? And no one raises their hand. But the reality is attorneys spend a ton of money on marketing, and then they don't focus on the sales that are happening within their firm. And so regardless of what you do, you need to really hone down this skill of sales. And your training libraries that you have at Voris.com are phenomenal. They're so good. But what is it that it kind of separates people today? Because those who put forth the effort then can really separate themselves from everybody else, right?
Yeah. There's a professionalism bar that I think that's once it's passed has a really big impact. And I don't know if people talk about this as much as they should. So like if you are the attorney, let's use that as an example, your ability to sell is going to naturally be a lot higher than the salesperson selling attorney services, which I don't think actually happens. I think mostly attorneys are selling attorney services. But in that example there,
the best attorneys have somebody else selling them stay in high dollar work. You know what I mean?
And the person selling through the best attorneys that have somebody selling the services, is that person not an attorney?
Not an attorney.
Okay, great. Yeah, I don't work a lot in law. But that's a great example. One of the reasons why I'm sure that's pretty challenging for attorneys to do is that they have so much expertise. And when you sell with a lot of expertise, the bar for like sales tactics that you use or like the fundamentals of selling is pretty low, because you can like muscle your way through it just because you're such an expert. It gives the other person a lot of trust and confidence that you know what they're talking about. This is a lot of like, I run into this all the time. Do as I say, not as I do. I have one of the loosest sales processes that you can have, but I've been doing this my whole career. I'm such an expert at it that I'm not worried about you know, fighting for a couple of percentage points. But my sales rep doesn't have the same level of expertise as me. So they're not going to have that benefit. So they need to be very structured. Now, imagine if you take somebody, like a, let's say an attorney, and you give them a lot of the fundamentals to use. So that now they know, like, hey, not only do I have all the expertise, but I can follow these fundamentals and our sales is incredible. Now you've started really building a process that you can bring someone else in to execute on. Mm-hmm. You've now removed a lot of the expertise from the process because that was all you. You transfer as much of that as you can, but that fundamental process you've already proven out. Now somebody else is taking that over. That is probably the best approach to get to that point.
Absolutely. There's no question. So Kyle, when you work with organizations, you work with companies, how many of them have some sort of a process before you get there?
Some, they are selling their product or service already. So that's like important. Right. They know the product or service is something that's desirable for the consumer. That is a prerequisite for sure. If you can't sell a bad product long-term. You can muscle it for a little bit, but it's not going to go well. So yeah, the vast majority of them do have some kind of like, hey, we sell things here. You know, we might not sell it very well, but what's very common is they have a couple of salespeople that might be struggling or doing okay. Or they are selling it. They've tried hiring salespeople before in the past and they couldn't transfer. Like I was talking about before, they couldn't make that transfer work. And then it becomes challenging. Or like, how do you hold salespeople accountable? It's very common. You'll have a salesperson for 8 to 12 months, barely close anything. And you're just like unsure. Like, do we not have enough leads for them? Is our script terrible? Is it their fault? Like you have no idea because one, you might not be an expert in sales, but then the other reason why people could struggle with this is because they don't know how to look at the metrics and the activities of the salesperson and say, yeah, you are doing what you need to do in order to hit your number. There's a lot of unknown. And when things are unknown, it's difficult to point the finger at somebody and say, you're not doing a good job.
Right, right. And do you see that, I mean, we're in a world right now that's changing, as you know, it's changing constantly. And especially with AI entering into the scene. But I still see people craving human to human interaction. Do you foresee a time? I mean, and again, we're all just predicting here, but do you think people will get to a point where they're good with just communicating completely with AI? Or do you think that sales role will be protected forever?
It's really tough to say because, I have had a lot of AI experience. So I use AI a lot to learn stuff. Like, and like when I say learn stuff, I want to know how things worked in ancient Rome or ancient Greece. I'll go on ChatGPT audio and just talk, ask questions. Tell me about Plato's philosophy. Oh, that's pretty similar to ancient Hindu philosophy. Like, what's the origin of that? Was there ever any overlap? So I can ask these questions and kind of learn from the AI. So I'm starting to shift more towards, I can see a world where we just interact with AI. If I go to buy something now, I go to AI first, and I'm probably more of an early adopter, but I was skeptical when it first released. But I can tell you, like, I'm looking for I'm potentially switching payment processors right now. So I had ChatGPT organize all of the best payment processors for me based on my requirements and tell me how much they cost so I can do comparisons. Makes research a lot easier. I don't know if that today replaces me meeting somebody who I really get along with, who's selling a product that I need. I prefer the human interaction still, but man, maybe there is a world where the human interaction is not as necessary. But there's one thing I can tell you. There will always be products and services that salespeople, humans, will need to sell. And generally, that's going to be because they cost a lot more. So a great example of this is Slack. Slack is the golden child of product-led growth. The vast majority of their early growth was just from having a really good product. And that product adoption skyrocketed. It was free, you paid to upgrade, et cetera. When they wanted to start pushing up market, they needed salespeople. Just the mid-market, the upper mid-market, the enterprise, you know, with hundreds, thousands of employees, they just weren't following that product-led growth buying process. They needed a human to help them navigate. It was a much bigger decision for them. So if there's a last bastion, it'll probably be that. If that ever gets replaced, I don't know. There's something special about human interaction, especially in person. It's tough to replace that, I think.
Well, and you know, I look at the day planners. Okay. So I grew up in a time where everyone, you know, had that Franklin Covey planner. And then everything went digital. They went to the Palm Pilot, then to the phone. What's crazy to me to see, Kyle, is people are actually going back to paper planners.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised with that, but a lot of people are going back to paper planners. And so as I look at AI, seeing, okay, will there come a time when people just want to interact with an actual human? I don't know. I don't know. But for me, I do crave that human-to-human interaction. I think we all do to a certain extent. I think we felt that during the COVID pandemic, right?
Yeah,
people wanted that human-to-human interaction.
And I wonder if you're less extroverted people, though, you know, because you're pretty extroverted. So am I. I don't know if the more introverted people are going to crave that.
Right. Or if it's going to just draw people more inward and we become more isolated. It's a great question. But as we approach this time, I do believe what you pointed out, I think is true. I think when people are making if people are deciding what type of hot sauce to buy, I don't think it really matters that much to them. But as the price of the product they're purchasing or the price of the service, and again, as I mentioned, I work with a lot of attorneys. When people are dealing with, something as scary and frightening as a divorce, or if they were in a catastrophic injury, or even dealing with their estate, people for some reason want to talk to a person about it for now. And that you're exactly right. That may change. But Kyle, what if you were to say someone's sitting there listening, saying, okay, so I just want to get better at selling. I want to be more intentional in my approach to selling. And I know you have an incredible resources at Voris.com, but tell me, what three things would you tell somebody that's saying, hey, listen, Kyle, I just want to get better at it. What are three things I could do?
Yeah. And I'll break this down a little bit because there's really two parts of a sales process that I think need to be worked on. The first part is how do I get meetings on the calendar to actually sell my product or service? So there's that portion of it. And really like the main thing there is you need to figure out the relationship between the activities that you do, the sales activities, and the outcomes of those activities. So my world, we do a lot of cold calling. I make 100 cold calls. Do I book one meeting? Once you understand the math behind the activities that you do in order to generate the meetings that you need to generate, then you can actually start predicting out the kind of the revenue attainment or how many sales you'll do based on that math. So that's the real first part is going to be understanding the relationship between the activities that you do and the meetings that get booked from those activities. Now, when it comes to actually navigating the sale itself, there's a couple of things I think are important. The first is that you have a sense of what you need to do in order to get a deal from a process perspective. Maybe we do an initial sales call and then we do a walkthrough of what our engagement looks like, or we do a demo of our product. Maybe it's a discovery call and then a demo, right? Like there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, but you have to have a sense of what meetings are required or what touch points are required in order to get a deal done. That's the first thing. The second thing here is going to be to be very transparent with the person you're selling to about what that process looks like and if there's anything that they need that isn't part of that process already. So if you're talking to somebody, they need other people involved in the deal, that's going to be something that you're going to want to talk to them about and when to bring them in, and that might require an extra meeting or whatever. But you want to be very transparent. So first thing, make sure you know what it looks like. And the second thing is be very transparent with the prospect about what the process looks like. And then the third thing is be genuinely curious about how you can help that person specifically. Identify what challenges they're running into and be genuine in your pursuit to help them solve that challenge. If you come from the perspective of, I want to help this person solve the problem versus I want to close a deal, somebody feels that. And when I even do my own sales calls, for example, I'll disqualify people quite often, even if I just don't feel like it would be a good fit. You know, it doesn't have to be super tangible to me.
Right.
But if you have that lens, you're going to find that people will sense that authenticity, and matching that authenticity and that genuine curiosity about how you can help, and you match that with how I have a very structured process. That's that professionalism plus that authenticity that usually is a really good recipe when you're first trying to figure out the best way to sell something.
Wow. That is phenomenal. Kyle, such great content, such great information, you know, and when you are intentional and you have the focus, like you just shared, it really can turn people's black and white world into color as they really have the success that they know they need to have, but they're just lacking some of these specific things that you talked about. Because one of the big, you know, the things that people don't love about salespeople is that they feel like they're just trying to cram, you know, a square peg through a round hole, right? And what you're talking about there, which is so important, be genuinely interested and ask those questions to get people to engage with you and want to work with you. So, such helpful information. Kyle, thank you for being with us. It was great catching up with you. Love the content you shared. So valuable. And again, you have a ton more at Voris.com. But appreciate your time. And Kyle, we'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate you having me. Talk soon.
Absolutely. Bye now.